This is health. Take care of it.
Should Chris be wired in with that, or? Here's the envelope it came in, by the way.
Okay, thanks. This will have to go through the zone.
Yeah.
It's not a long road yet. We just usually just turn these out. The municipal land use letters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take care of it.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. Chris, need to be wrapped in the...
Don't think so.
Okay. All right.
Good Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah. Too good.
Yeah, as usual.
That's too much.
She'll be here.
How exciting.
And I got a phone call.
Dave gave us a bunch of handouts and materials to supplement the binder.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to include an index of exhibits, which we're going to move into the record. Did you still have the index, exhibit index?
Yeah, okay. I hand everybody a copy of the exhibit index along with the other exhibits that I will put into the record.
No.
Okay, there you go. I didn't see it. Okay.
Yeah, you can see it.
Yeah, always is. It's a good 4 days for me, though. It's rare to have a good 4 day week. Do they bounce a little bit? Or do you stay?
No, I went to the planning commission.
That's right. I remembered. I thought you were heading on a road trip.
Yeah, well, my mom, this is the first year in 7 years. I have to cook.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
I didn't know what to do
for the whiskey. Yes.
Is there such a thing? Yeah, you know. And we host, so it's a really hectic day for us, you know. But it's the one holiday we host,
this
so
is all.
We had like 16 guys. Yeah.
Pretty big, but not unmatched.
Didn't fill up the second table.
Yeah, right.
Which is good because you know when you're finding people and you put mom in the corner somewhere. You know. She'll be here in just a minute.
Okay. Oh, this is the budget.
This is the small budget.
I got scared here walking up there like, I don't remember any of this. Superfluous right now.
So when do we have the budget meeting tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Mark, 6 o'clock tomorrow?
Yeah, that's my understanding. Send our kids to Harvard.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Is that Harvard, Mississippi?
Exactly.
Yeah, there it is.
I hit the send button and they just popped in here.
So if you want.
Gosh, why is your text blurred?
Can you see?
So Doug is coming to the meeting anyway. He just went home.
Yeah.
Has any of these out to you guys yet this year?
No. It's all we need is something else to put on the table.
Feel free to take it.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
Is phone here for a reason?
Yeah, keep the present call.
I know, really.
Okay,
everybody read this?
Dave gave us a bunch of exhibits. He has CDs there, and we have an exhibit, list of exhibits, which are going to be, they correlate mostly with the binder, and it's going to be moved into the records.
I lost my gavel. Oh, there it is. I'd like to call to order the public hearing regarding the conditional use application number 2018-01 as filed by the Hershey Trust Company trustee for Milton Hershey School for the Hershey West End. May I please have a roll call?
Here.
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 At this time, who's going to lead off tonight? Chuck, is that going to be you?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a
introduction,
a broad overview of the project. Yeah,
very well.
Some things that I believe need to be on the record, and then the applicant would also like to make a presentation. So this is a master plan conditional use hearing this evening. It affects 245.79 acres of land. I think we all know where the land's located. It's within our Planned Campus West Future Development Overlay District, our Planned Campus West Zoning District, and it's also affected by the Conservation Zoning District for two pieces of the property, and it has a multitude of overlay districts on it, conservation overlay districts and overlay districts along Wood Road, Bullfrog Valley Road, and 322. The project is Hershey West End development, and the properties presently contain the Cocoa Beanery restaurant, the Hershey Center for Applied Research, the UGRO facility, and a proposed Englewood barn project that was recently approved. It's an adaptive reuse of a barn that'll have 292 seat restaurant and a 240 seat live entertainment venue. The site also contains another barn and homestead located down here at the southwest corner of the property at the corner of Wood Road and Waltonville Road. And that homestead will remain through the duration of the project. The property will be serviced by public water and public sewer facilities. Both DTMA and American Water have provided letters to serve. At some point during the cycle of the project, a 12-inch water main will need to be extended through the property. And there's a good chance that there's going to be a sewer pump station also to service a portion of the property. The development itself is comprised of about 590,000 square feet of commercial space and 919 new dwelling units. Of those uses, certain uses are subject to conditional uses. Now, conditional uses under the master plan approval are not necessarily done by separate hearings, but done through this hearing, so long as the applicant agrees to meet all the conditions, which they have. The uses within this development that are conditional uses are the single-family detached dwellings, which are only permitted in the zoning district as part of the master plan. The single-family attached, multifamily apartments, likewise. The life care facility and skilled nursing home is a conditional use. The research technology business incubator is a conditional use. Shared parking throughout the property, which is proposed, is also permitted by conditional use. They have some mixed-use buildings, mixing some residential and commercial, which are, again, subject to the conditional use. And the hotel that's proposed on the property will be part of a conditional use. As I said, the applicant has provided information supporting the conditional uses, which are included in the monstrous packets that we all have. We found them to be acceptable to grant those uses. Although, I'm happy to go over them if you like. The project is anticipated to be developed over a 12-year period with five phases, as are shown on the screen. The master plan section of our zoning ordinance allows a master plan to span 7 years with an optional 5-year term. The applicant has asked for the optional 5-year term, completing their 12 years that is part of their projection. The property is currently subject to a declaration of condominium based on prior developments, which even the most recent Englewood Barn is part of. So there are condominium lots within the development today. Within as this project moves forward and starts to develop the open spaces and other amenities that would be associated with the development of this sort, they will be maintained by the condominium association, and the streets within this development will be dedicated to the township for maintenance, as will the public sanitary sewer lines. The applicant provided a preliminary pattern book or architectural standards book, which in many ways will replace portions of the zoning ordinance. I apologize, I'm working on my second cold this month. So, this pattern book is absolutely incredible. If you've had a chance to look through it, although it doesn't look as though, as to what all it contains with regards to the feel of the development, the manner in which each house and each lot is to be sited. It even goes into some of the architectural styles of Hershey and carrying them through the development. But as I said, a portion of this book will be used as the regulatory book for the development. It will create the zoning setback lines that we will enforce when issuing building permits. Within the master plan approval, they are permitted to alter some of the setbacks of the base zoning district. For instance, if it was a traditional development here, we would require a 25-foot front yard setback. In this case, they've altered that to be between 5 and 15 feet for most residential uses and a zero setback for commercial uses to bring them out to the street, as you would normally see in a village atmosphere. Likewise, the rear setbacks are regulated at 10 feet, and they are proposing 0 to 5-foot setbacks to, again, accommodate a village atmosphere. The maximum building height requirement of the base zoning district is 60 feet. The regulations do allow, within the master plan approval, the height to go to 65 feet. In this case, they have a hotel and conference center that they believe is going to be greater than 65 feet, although the final design is not done yet. If indeed they pursue that at greater than 65 feet, that will send them to the zoning hearing board because they will have exceeded the limit that's set by the master plan allotments. The applicant also under master plan is supposed to start to tell us what they want in the way of subdivision and land development relief to put their development together. And in this case, in following along item one, is cartway width and right-of-way width, and that is affecting Street D. And that's the only street within the development where they're asking for a relief for the cartway and right-of-way width. They're asking for a 44-foot wide right-of-way where a 60-foot right-of-way would otherwise be required, and a 24-foot paved surface with two 12-foot travel lanes, where a 34-foot paved surface with 10-foot travel lanes and two 7-foot parking lanes would otherwise be required. And staff and planning commission are recommending approval. Again, it's part of the design of the village that they're creating. They're asking for, under item two, which really affects the alleys through the development, that curbing not be provided. Under our SALDO requirements, curbing is provided or to be provided on all public streets, and that includes alleys. Here again, understanding the atmosphere that they're trying to create, planning commission and staff are recommending approval. And that's true till I tell you different, if that's okay. Item number three, they're looking for minimum centerline radius for Street A as it comes past buildings Q, N, and P. And that is in this area. And they're asking for 150-foot where 300-foot is otherwise required. And in this case, with it coming into a T-intersection and in a low-speed area, Planning Commission and staff have recommended that. They're asking for, under item four, centerline separation of roads as they intersect other roads. And that's mostly on Street E, which is this street, and for these few intersections. And again, understanding that it's coming out at open space, they're trying to do some traffic calming in that area. That's the introduction to the residential area from commercial area. Planning Commission and staff do recommend that. They're looking for a waiver of centerline separation at intersections with collectors throughout the development. That is item five, and that has to do with some of the intersections that you can see here. And again, in this village atmosphere, I think it's created as a traffic calming device. They have on-street parking. I don't see where the intersection separations would have as much meaning as they would in a traditional purely residential development. And we're recommending that be granted. They're asking for relief of minimum curb radiuses as alleys and other streets intersect the main streets. And again, they're trying to keep traffic slow and have that village feel. They've provided us a turning template showing us that fire trucks can get through the site. And in some cases, fire trucks do encroach on other lanes, and that's acceptable for fire trucks. We've asked for some turning templates for buses, refuse vehicles, UPS trucks. I've not seen those to review. We're going to suspect that they're going to be okay since fire trucks make it all right, but that is still to be reviewed. They have asked for a waiver for concentric right-of-way lines and curb lines. And as you can see by the design of many of their streets, it would be very difficult to have the right-of-way line and the curb line all in the same radius point, all concentric to each other. Overall, we don't see a problem with the street structure or the way it's put together. They've kept the sidewalks to the edge of the right-of-way, which is required by ordinance, so we're recommending that be approved. They've asked for a relief of block dimensions throughout portions of the property. And again, our ordinance requires that blocks be 500 feet and their smallest block is 190 feet. But again, I believe that with the whole development, the way it's put together, that these are reasonable requests. Now we're going to get into some requests that are come out to our public streets. So they've asked for a waiver for roadway widening and right-of-way widening for Bullfrog Valley Road. Bullfrog Valley Road was widened as part of the initial H-car development. The right-of-way was granted. There is some additional right-of-way to be granted at the southeast corner of the property. They are willing to grant that. And that portion of the roadway was not widened, and I believe that could be deferred as part of this approval. For Wood Road, they've asked for a deferment for street widening. However, they are proposing right-of-way dedication. I think initially they were suggesting that they not have to grant it along the old homestead, but I believe that there's adequate space there to grant the entire Wood Road right-of-way. So there we would recommend deferring the widening and accepting the road right-of-way. For Waltonville Road right-of-way, there's a lot happening on Waltonville Road through this development. They're looking at putting in a traffic circle. They're looking at probably modifying the ramp onto the highway. They are modifying the service road. They are also, as we get further into the staff comments, we'll see, we're going to look at possible connections of a road that's been projected in our official plan. So in this case, I am not recommending that the waiver be granted for right-of-way dedication along Waltonville Road to allow for future improvements, and that roadway widening only be granted to the point that it's not necessary to service this development. And finally, they are asking for, under the Subdivision and Land Development Ordinance, which requires street trees at least 40 feet apart, but not greater than 75 feet apart. Through some of the development, and you can see up by this park area here, they've opened up some of the street. They've asked for a waiver for the stationing or the spacing of the trees. However, they assure us that they will plant every tree that would otherwise be required at that spacing within the development. And we feel that that's a reasonable request and suggest that it be granted. As I mentioned before, the applicant's proposing to use shared parking provision of the zoning ordinance. We think that that's a great way to go. And as you'll see, the raw parking requirement for this development would be 3,880 spaces. Under the analysis done under the shared parking agreement, the required parking is at the highest demand time is only 3,022. So we lose 860 spaces just by time of day. The applicant is proposing 3,067 on-street parking spaces, which is a surplus, off-street parking spaces, which is a surplus of 45 spaces beyond the regulatory requirement. And additionally, they are providing 1,030 on-street parking spaces, so there should be ample parking within the development. The within the pattern book, as I mentioned, it does set some of the requirements for development. And for their walk-up apartments, which are shown here, and for the corridor apartments, which are shown, they in their pattern book have a maximum building height of 38 feet and I think 35 feet. I'm suggesting that they be changed to 40 feet and 50 feet, which is permissible by the zoning. Since the pattern book will become my regulatory book, I figured it'd be better to change it now than send them to the zoning hearing board later on their own pattern book. I'm concerned that those buildings won't look well at this shorter height. Within the pattern book, they have a lot of signage requirements. However, the master plan process does not allow the applicant to modify the signage requirement. So I've asked that they place a note in the pattern book that says that the signage section of this pattern book is meant as a guide and supplement to the signage requirements of the Township Zoning Ordinance. Where the Township Zoning Ordinance is more restrictive than these guidelines, its regulation shall prevail.
If the townships is more restrictive than the
pattern? Where the townships is more restrictive. For instance, within their pattern book, they allow temporary signs, which we really try not to. That's the easiest example I can give you of the difference. The applicant has provided an economic impact report as required by the master plan approval process. Within that report, they show at full build-out, and in my report I have other numbers, but they show at full build-out that the township's estimated net benefit will be $1.17 million. So that's money above and beyond the cost of services for the development. The idea with the economic impact report is to show that the development will have a positive impact, positive financial impact. As a matter of fact, the ordinance goes as far as to say, if it doesn't have a positive impact, then that's grounds for rejection of the master plan. We believe in this case that they meet that testing. Give me 1 second. Okay. The applicant has had TPD as their traffic engineer for this project. At full build out, they will be building 5.372 miles of roads within this development, roads and alleys. The traffic study narrative notes that two traffic studies are proposed for the development. The idea is that phase one study, which is done at present, which Justin, as I said, was larger than the book that you held up earlier, is done with a lot of projections. The township, PennDOT, and the applicant have all met and agreed that the proper way to do such a sizable development is with the phase one traffic study, to build out a few phases, come back, remeasure everything, and come back in with a phase two study. And that's what's proposed through this development. And it's a reasonable way to go. The phase one study will address the traffic that's proposed as part of the first few phases. And it actually digs into phase two. That will be a condition of approval, assuming this project is approved. It's listed amongst the conditions of approval. So within the traffic report itself, the following recommendations are made: to install a roundabout at the intersection of Wanville Road and the relocated 322 ramp. The roundabout will be designed to allow a future two-lane expansion in a northbound direction. And that is being done in part because, as I've talked before about completing the connector road for Middletown Road to Bullfrog Valley Road. The traffic report initially talks about putting a traffic signal at the during the opening year at the Waltonville Road, Quarry Road, 322 off-ramp, west off-ramp, and to optimize the function of the traffic signals on Middletown Road, 322, Bullfrog Valley Road, the existing signals within basically, I guess, a mile of the development. So those are the only recommendations that are made within the traffic study for the initial phases. At full build-out, the proposed Hershey West End development is anticipated to result in 811 new AM peak hour trips, 955 new PM peak hour trips, and 1,105 new Saturday peak hour trips. That's the midday. Within the traffic study, it talks about two intersections in the area that are going to be degraded through the background development and development of this property. The one is the Middletown Road 322 eastbound off-ramp and frontage road, which is to the west of what's shown on the screen. In that case, that level of service is expected to drop from level C to level D. The way that works is PennDOT will consider allowing that 10-second drop as long as the municipality concurs, agrees that it's okay to drop that. Likewise, the Middletown Road Wood Road intersection will drop from level C to level D with a 12-second additional delay. In order to mitigate that marginal level of service degradation, the installation of a traffic light at that intersection would do so. However, I believe that we all know that, that that's not where we would like to have a traffic signal. We're looking at someday having a traffic signal at Gramercy and the road that we would push through as part of our official map. So on our official map, since I've referred to it a few times now, we show a new ramp, new connector, but we show a road that would come over to Gramercy and would also then come through what is being proposed as Hershey West End, ultimately tying to Bullfrog Valley Road. In this case, this development will take care of a very large leg of this expansion. The developer, a few township officials met and started having conversations about what we can do to push this through with the drops in service at Middletown Road and the drops of service at Wood Road. And at this time, I believe that the applicant with their consultant is willing to begin to look at some horizontal and vertical design for this other leg of the bypass road. This is an important consideration in this area. This piece of road serves a lot of traffic. Approximately, for the Med Center, there's 12,000 staff members, and they see over 1.2 million people a year, many of which come through this area. Likewise, about 18% of the township's population is on the Wood Road corridor. So promoting this connection as part of this development, I think, would be a benefit to all of us. What's that?
In our discussions the other day, we talked about having you take a preliminary look at design and then discussing a collaborative effort to potentially move forward with construction at some point in time.
Thanks.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay.
Good segue. Thanks. So as we start to look at this development as a whole, I think it's going to bring some good things to the township. The budget impact appears to be favorable from the economic impact report. The Planning Commission at their meeting recommended approval. We have reviews by HRG, Dauphin County Planning Commission, DTMA, none of which are not favorable for the project. So that really concludes my presentation. I'm just struggling to find the words to bring it to an end. So I'll say this. The Board of Supervisors is required to render a written decision within 45 days after the last hearing for this project, unless an extension of time is granted by the applicant. If the hearing is closed tonight, a decision will need to be rendered no later than January 11th, keeping in mind that your closest regular meeting to that date is December 18th, unless the Board would consider adoption at reorganization. If the Board does choose to render an affirmative decision, I have provided within my staff comments a series of suggested conditions. A few of them have changed slightly since the writing of the staff comments. For instance, the comment about the traffic, or I'm sorry, about the economic impact report, we didn't have everything to review till yesterday. That all seems to be in order. If indeed the supervisors would move this forward, we would circulate a draft decision for the board to consider. So again, it's not necessary to take any action at this hearing. However, you will need to within 45 days.
Thank you, Chuck. And before we begin with any other staff comments and applicant testimony, I just want to remind that although it's posted within the meeting room, it is and has been the policy of the township to tape record all public meetings for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. So with that noted, Ken, you have the floor.
Good evening. Ken Gall, Hershey Trust Company. First, I'd like to just lay a little bit of background on this. This is a project actually started in 2006. This piece of ground was actually at that point master planned for a commercial medical office space, which it's the zoning would still permit. I guess working with the township through the comprehensive planning process, the rezoning process, what's really good is this piece of ground has been converted to something that I believe is going to end up being real special for this community. You know, rather than a office park like you see down in Lancaster near Park City, this could potentially be an identity. It's the first thing you see when you're coming into the township. So I'd just like to thank everybody. It's been a long process, been at it for a number of years. Somebody asked me today how long that was, and I can't remember. converting what could have been 2 million square foot of office space to something that's going to be a village, I think it's really cool and really happy to be proud of it, and I think you guys should be in the end happy to be proud of it, or be proud of it, be part of your township. One of the guiding forces on that is when we talk about this traffic and things is the people that will be living here, the people will be eating here are already. Most likely already working, a lot of them are working in the medical center already. So kind of the concept of maybe providing opportunities for housing and other things to do in township that are close to where people are working, that's kind of been the driving or guiding force. The radiation technologist at the med center isn't driving in a half hour, 45 minutes to get here, giving the opportunity for some of those folks to live here. So tonight, Chuck did a lot of our presentation for us. Bill will have to cut some out. But we have a team here tonight. Bill from RGS will do a site plan overview. Urban Design Associates has been our master planner on the project from the get-go. He'll talk about the pattern book. Patrick, Economic Impact, GMS Service, and this is probably the first one you'll see as part of a master plan. Pretty interesting process in terms of determining the economic impact of a project of this size. It's been an interesting. Amy from GMS Services is here. Craig will discuss, I think, end up probably focusing a lot on a roundabout from what I understand, but we'll talk about the traffic and the traffic study. We do ask, and one thing we're asked is if you could hold questions till everybody goes, we will all come back up and try to field questions at the end. I think that will keep, otherwise we'll probably get to the first item on the agenda and not make it past there. So if that's okay with everybody, I'll start with Dave Shetty. We'll just lay out a little bit of groundwork here.
Good evening. David Schutte of Pepper Hamilton. We represent Hershey Trust Company, trustee from Mount Hershey School. A couple of legal housekeeping matters. Instead of producing an exhibit booklet for all of you this evening and killing a couple redwoods, what I did was I prepared an exhibit index, which I put on all of your seats earlier this evening. Exhibits 1 through 21 on the exhibit index have been provided to you through the township, either through the application or through resubmissions of the application following receiving comments from the staff and the Planning Commission. Exhibits 20 Exhibit 22 is a PowerPoint presentation that we will be having on the screen this evening. Also, a hard copy has been provided to all of you. And then Exhibits 23 through 26 are the curriculum vitae of the four individuals that will be testifying in their expert capacities. As a housekeeping matter first, I'd like to request that the admission of all of the exhibits that have been provided.
Any objection by anybody to the admission of these exhibits? None. Noted, exhibits 1 through 26 are hereby admitted into the record.
And then the second item of a legal housekeeping matter is I'd like to request a motion that all of the witnesses, based upon the CVs that have been provided, all of the witnesses are experts in their respective fields. In particular, Mr. Fredericks be qualified as an expert in civil engineering. Mr. Bruner be recognized as an expert in architecture. Mr. Malott be recognized as an expert in traffic engineering. And Ms. Cronenberg be recognized as an expert in economic impact analysis.
Any questions or concerns about the qualifications of the experts proposed? Hearing none, those experts will be so qualified.
Okay, and then just as a little bit of legal background here, as I'm sure you're all aware, this is a hearing on a conditional use application. A conditional use is a permitted use within a zoning district that may only be established after a hearing before the governing body, the municipality, in this case the Board of Supervisors. And at which time during the hearing, the applicant must demonstrate compliance with all the applicable criteria of the zoning ordinance. And if the applicant does meet all of the criteria within the zoning ordinance, then the conditional use approval must be granted. In this case, Hershey Trust Company is applying to use this property as a master plan development, which is a conditional use within the planned Campus West District. The specific criteria for the master plan approval is found in Section 225.501.58, and the general criteria for all conditional uses is found at 225.501K. And as Chuck also mentioned during his staff report, Appendix E of the zoning ordinance also makes reference to a condition for approval based upon the results of the economic impact analysis. And then also, as Chuck pointed out as well, there's a handful of conditional uses that are conditional uses in the underlying zoning district with or without the master plan approval, and Mr. Frederick will speak to all of those as well. And so I'm going to introduce Bill to you, and he's going to go over the site plan and the civil engineering behind the site plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Fredericks, RGS Associate Civil Engineer for the project. Mr. Emmerich did a great job, and I'm going to try and pare mine down so I don't duplicate efforts. This is the site plan. I think you guys know where it is. Just one thing to reiterate, as Mr. Emmerich mentioned, we did submit a sketch plan. This plan is largely similar to that sketch plan. Certainly some modifications and refinements as we've gotten to the master plan, but as presented to this board in April, this plan largely follows what that sketch plan presented. To cover the zoning, we have a mix of residential, commercial uses, restaurants, office space. The residential component, as outlined in conditional use section 501.04, allows for single-family attached, detached, semi-detached, multifamily apartments. This project is proposing 123 single-family units, 146 townhome units, and 462 apartment units. There's a mix of commercial retail, approximately 84,000 square feet, located within the Village Square or Village Center area. There's restaurants in that same area, office uses within the two blue buildings. There's a hotel conference center use in this peach pinkish color, approximately 115,000 square feet, as allowed per conditional use section 501.50. There's two proposed medical office buildings. There's an existing one here, two proposed here, approximately 151 square feet. Life care facilities and skilled nursing units, there's on the west end of West End, there's approximately 188 units proposed as permitted per conditional use section 501.34. There's some various community buildings to serve the site as well. But all uses are permitted by right or by conditional use. Just a note on the densities, the master plan does allow a density bonus. With those, the single family detached attached is 7 dwelling units per net developable area, single family attached is 6.75 dwelling units, apartments are 15 dwelling units per net developable area, and senior housing, life care facilities, skilled nursing is 18.75 dwelling units. All that to say that based on what we're proposing, if you calc out the units and the uses, we need approximately 80 acres of net developable area. The site total, based on the net developable area per the township ordinance standards, is 236 acres total. So we have enough net developable area to meet the densities required. We are proposing some open space throughout the project. There's what's referenced Overlook Park. It's approximately 6.5 acres. West End Park is more in the center of the residential area, approximately an acre. There's a dog park proposed as you get closer to Waltonville Road. That's approximately an acre. And then what's called the Green, which is along West End Ave, which is about 0.4 acres. In addition to that, there's certainly open space throughout the site. There's the Bullfrog Valley, which has some passive benches, walkways. As Chuck mentioned, there's some heritage buffers along the perimeter of 322 Bullfrog Valley Wood Road that provides some open space as well. All elements will be open to the public. As Chuck actually mentioned, they'll be maintained by the condo association, included as part of common elements within that condo documents. Now, one thing to note on here, there is Bullfrog Valley Park that is not part of the project site. It's just noted there as the interconnectedness with the Jonathan Neschnauer Memorial Trail. We are, connecting to that and incorporating that into the West End site. To the greatest extent practical, the proposed design protects sensitive environmental features, existing wooded areas, historical resources. We did evaluate the net developable area per the township standards. They're limited on the site. There's steep slopes and a tree massing within this Overlook Park. That Overlook Park accounts for that and incorporates that into the park design. There was wetlands identified approximately here, protected as per the design, and will be incorporated throughout the stormwater design as that moves forward with each phase. I won't touch on that. Mr. Emmerich mentioned it will be consolidated into one lot and a part of the condominium. The whole project will be consolidated into a single lot and incorporated into the condominium documents. The phasing schedule. I'll point out that phase one is largely existing buildings except for this medical office building located here. Phase two is where the most significant phase from a cost and from an infrastructure standpoint. You've got West End coming all the way out to Waltonville Road and all the utilities, the infrastructure associated with that. You'll have stormwater facilities being installed. There is an existing sewer line across the site towards the north, an existing force main that comes into the site. Those will be incorporated and accounted to into the design as each phase is taken underway and those facilities may get affected. Street classifications, Mr. Emmerich mentioned, all streets and alleys are intended to be dedicated. They were designed in accordance with township standards as modified per the requested modifications that he noted. One thing about the modifications, they do mainly relate to street geometry, in part to create pedestrian safety at crosswalks on those tighter radii, bring the pedestrians closer to the crosswalk so you're not crossing at such a longer distance or further back. And then a lot of it is trying to create a traffic calming within these residential neighborhoods. Certainly there's low speeds expected and intended to be low volumes within the residential portion of the site. The street system does provide for direct points of ingress and egress in a manner to ensure convenient and safe access to the site. We exceed the road frontage of more than 150 feet on all perimeter streets. Mr. Emmerich touched on the surrounding streets. Shared parking It is per conditional use section 501.42. It will be included within the condo documents as an enforceable document with tenants. And it will be evaluated on a phase-by-phase basis to make sure that the tenants that are going in, there's enough parking sufficient for those uses. So it will be reevaluated on a phase-by-phase basis. The overall stormwater approach, there are two main study points to the site, study point one and study point four. You'll ask where study point two and three. They're along 322, but they're rather insignificant compared to study point one and four. Two and three are approximately an acre in size of drainage area. Study point one under 322 has a drainage area of approximately 180 acres, 90 on-site, 90 off-site, and study point four has a drainage area of approximately 110 acres, about 100 on-site, 7 off-site, give or take. We are going to meet the design of the ordinance requirements for design for release rate. As part of that, you create an allowable release rate. We're actually below that allowable release rate because of the existing culverts under 322. Study point one has a 24-inch pipe discharge. We're not proposing to expand that or increase the release rate that existing 24-inch pipe would do now. Same with the 36-inch pipe at study point four. The total site coverage impervious that this analysis takes into account is about 70% impervious as allowed per the ordinance. There was geology testing done. It is a karst area, to no one's surprise, especially around the 322 corridor. So the design intent stormwater wise would be for perimeter site controls, for rate control, and then interior water quality BMPs in part to start addressing the MS4 township requirements for water quality purposes. Those would be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Some water quality BMPs might be more applicable to single family, some might be more applicable to commercial situations. Overall, the stormwater approach utilizes low-impact design solutions to the greatest extent feasible to provide rate control and water quality requirements. With that said, all public improvements, streets, sidewalks, trails, walkways, bike paths, lighting, stormwater facilities, all will be designed in compliance with the zoning ordinance, now the Division of Land Development Ordinance, Stormwater Management Ordinance, unless a modification as requested and has been requested and identified with our application and submittal. With that, I'll turn it over to Patrick with UDA.
Thanks, Bill. I am Patrick Brunner. I am a project manager with Urban Design Associates out of Pittsburgh. We write pattern books and architectural guidelines across the country as well as abroad. We wrote this one, and we've been involved in the master planning process from the beginning, as Ken mentioned. So I'm going to go over the purpose of the pattern book as well as the organization of the pattern book or how it should be used. So the purpose of the pattern book is to assure a predictable outcome and a minimum architectural design standard for the architecture that's going to be built in this neighborhood. The pattern book will be amended to the condo declaration and will be privately enforced through that same process. The pattern book also illustrates the regulatory elements of the master plan approval through two-dimensional and three-dimensional drawings, often with charts and keys to those drawings. And it includes things such as building height, building separation, coverage, design, and signage. So the organization of the pattern book really follows two parallel tracks, one for the residential land units and one for the non-residential land units. So for the residential land units, the first section, the community pattern section, outlines how the building is placed on the land unit. And this includes building separation, height, maximum lot coverage, parking location, and permitted encroachments. Then after that, one of the three styles is selected. We drew from the region. So for example, we chose Victorian, Colonial, and Craftsman as the three styles because they were found throughout the area here. So in each of those three style sections, it looks at typical massing, roof forms, window, door, porch, eave details, as well as permitted materials for the residential buildings. And finally, in the landscape pattern section, what permitted species are allowed on the lot are also listed. And these were drawn specifically from kind of the middle Pennsylvania region, so trying to encourage native species. The non-residential land units follow a similar pattern. The West End Village section outlines the building location on the land unit, just like in the residential, building height, permitted encroachments, and things of that nature. And then the architectural principles are also in that same section, and they describe what makes a building scale to the pedestrian in a commercial setting. And like the architecture of the residential, there is the landscape patterns for those as well. So the West End Village Center describes the five building types, one-story retail, mixed-use, anchor retail, office, and hotel. Within these five sections, the building composition, massing, roof forms, fenestration, bay articulation is laid out. It basically describes what common elements you'd find in these buildings. Within this section as well is the commercial and storefront regulations, and these are a guide and they supplement the Derry Township zoning ordinance, and when the two, as mentioned, are in conflict, the zoning ordinance shall prevail. So just like the commercial signage, the wayfinding community signage are oriented towards the pedestrian, and they provide a sense of unity and clarity within the Hershey West End. They also provide a sense of identity. So we've drawn from local stone and materials and plant life as well here. And we hope that this creates a respectful setting. Here's just a plan of West End Avenue showing where some of this wayfinding might be found, as well as the heights and design of those elements. With that, I will turn it over to Amy of GMS.
Good evening. My name is Amy Cronenberg. I'm the Executive Vice President of GMS Funding Solutions. We are a Central Pennsylvania-based consulting firm specializing in public funding and economic development. The Hershey Trust Company retained our services to develop an economic impact report aimed at satisfying the requirements of Derry Township Zoning Ordinance Appendix E. Appendix E outlines the parameters for calculation and the impact evaluation standards for a cost-benefit analysis of a proposed master plan development, in this case, Hershey West End. The objective of the analysis is to determine whether the proposed development will result in a net negative or a net positive fiscal impact to the township and to the Derry Township School District. Appendix E requires that projections for the following revenues and expenditures here be estimated in the cost-benefit analysis. The specific formulas for how to calculate these are stated in Appendix E, which I can always review in detail, but in the interest of time, we'll just go through with the results. So specifically, we estimated property taxes, earned income tax, occupation taxes, local services tax, which was formerly the occupational privilege tax for the school district, real estate transfer tax, permit fee revenues, and other revenues and expenditures for Derry Township and the school district. Now, each phase, based on the proposed development activities and uses, is going to generate varying one-time and annual reoccurring tax and fee revenues and expenses. You'll see that in phase one, we're dealing with entirely commercial uses. There are no residential uses here, which is going to be particularly helpful to the school district because it will front load property taxes before they begin to incur any expenses for new students. Phase two is still robust in commercial uses, but also incorporates 359 residential units. So now we're starting to see new residents and new students, 22 new students and 357 new adult residents is our estimate for this phase. And phase three is another mix of commercial and residential uses, adding 221 new units, which we estimate will result in 61 new students and 324 new adult residents to the community. And four and five are entirely residential. Combined, we expect they'll add approximately 107 new students and 509 new adult residents. All the while through this phase build out, taxes and fees are accumulating. And as we'll see in the next two slides here, we expect that they will indeed exceed the expenditures for both taxing bodies. For the purposes of summarizing the detail here, we've bundled the impacts into three categories: property tax revenue, which is self-explanatory, additional fees and taxes. This is going to vary whether we're talking about the township or the school district, but generally will include EIT, occupation tax, real estate transfer taxes, local services tax, stormwater fees, building permit fees, and other revenue, which is essentially a catch-all for all other receivables that are not specifically captured in the previous categories. The final category is estimated expenditures, which is the cost to the township and the school district based on the number of new residents or new students. The total of these three categories are going to provide your estimated net impact per phase, which happens to be positive in each case. So for Derry Township, once phase one is completed, it'll be rather modest. You'll have a one-time estimated revenue of about $180,000, and that's primarily from building permit fees. Between your property taxes and other taxes and fees, we expect you'll start realizing nearly $65,000 in annual reoccurring revenue. Phase two gets better as you experience more construction. Now, we're also seeing new residents as well, so you've started to incur costs with phase two. We expect you'll realize a one-time revenue of almost $940,000. Again, that's primarily from building permit fees. And we expect the new annual reoccurring revenue to be an estimated $390,000. That same trend will continue through phases three through five. Again, the revenue and expenditures are going to fluctuate based on the quantity and type of uses being constructed. But at full build out, once West End is complete, we expect the township will have collected an estimated $2.9 million in one-time fees, taxes and fees, and will collect roughly $1.159 million in annual reoccurring revenue. Now, looking at the school district's impacts, you're going to recognize the same trends. The school district will see a sizable increase in reoccurring property taxes in phase one. Again, that's from that commercial construction. Without any residential sales transactions, we've not figured any transfer taxes into phase one. Starting in phase two, they'll begin to see one-time transfer tax revenues, and their property taxes will increase considerably. At this point, the school district is also going to start incurring expenses for new students, though. Still, their net impact, we expect, will remain positive at over $2 million collected annually. As was the case with the township, this trend will carry through phases three through five. And at the end, once Hershey West End is fully constructed, we believe the school district will have collected an estimated $579,000 in one-time transfer tax revenue and will be collecting approximately $5.38 million in new annual reoccurring tax revenues. Again, these projections are using the formulas and factors outlined in Appendix E, as well as the assumptions and variable inputs that are detailed more fully in the complete economic impact report. Ultimately, our analyses suggest that the financial position of both the township and the school district will improve as a result of the proposed development with a net positive fiscal impact. I'll hand it over to Craig Malott with TPD.
Good evening. Craig Malott with Traffic Planning Design. We prepared the Transportation Impact Study, or TIS as I'll refer to it, for Hershey West End. Chuck did an excellent job summarizing the study. He's going to pare down a lot of what I had to say, but let me just talk briefly today about the purpose of the TIS, the collaborative scope process that we went through to determine the parameters in the report, and then shed a little bit of light on the recommendations that were made as part of our report. So ultimately, as you may be aware, the purpose of a TIS is predominantly twofold. Its purpose is to determine to evaluate site access requirements for development. So in essence, to determine number, location, configuration of driveways needed to provide safe and efficient access to a property, And then secondly, and as importantly, is to assess off-site traffic impacts that are directly related to construction of the development that's at hand. For a project of this size, given its complexity, given the time frame over which it will be built, we were required to go through a collaborative scoping process to determine what the study would include in terms of intersections, time periods, the methodologies that would be used to forecast traffic, those sort of things. That collaborative process involved your township staff, your engineers, some elected officials. It also includes Hummelstown Borough, just because of their presence immediately to the north and the fact that they will see some traffic generated as a result of this development. And then obviously it involved PennDOT as well, because PennDOT owns Waltonville Road, 322, many of the roadways here, and have control over the design and approval of improvements along them. That scoping process that was collaborative culminated in a scoping meeting at PennDOT in June of 2018, 5 months ago. And at that meeting, the scope parameters were determined and agreed upon among those stakeholders that I referenced, and then we prepared the TIS. Not going to go into great detail in the interest of time, because I want to leave plenty of time for questions, but one of the key elements that came out of the scoping process is the intersections that we would look at offsite to assess impact. This shows, I know it's hard to see, in essence, it was agreed that a one-mile circumference of the Hershey West End site, which is right here, that all of the major intersections at or within that one-mile circumference would be analyzed. It amounted to 11 total intersections that were analyzed, three along Bullfrog Valley, five along Waltonville, and then three along Middletown Road. After the scoping process was completed, we then prepared the TIS and then formulated recommendations to provide safe and efficient access to Hershey West End and then also to mitigate the traffic impacts associated with the development for that study area that I referenced. I am not going to repeat what Chuck had referenced. He did a very good job identifying the way we're going to phase the traffic and also the improvements that are recommended. I do want to shed some light on a couple of the improvements just to kind of give you a taste of why some things are being proposed. With respect to the township's official map, Chuck did mention that your map shows a proposed connection ultimately from Middletown Road, which is over here, you know, it's hard to see, to Bullfrog Valley Road, and that West End Avenue, which is here, fully implements that first segment. And then Chuck mentioned the intent to work collaboratively with the trust and with the township to implement the second leg of that, which the trust has agreed to do. I believe the intent of that connector road is to add redundancy to the road system. So we know that of the issues that exist along Middletown Road, we know of the existence of traffic on Wood Road. I think the intent is to provide alternate access, particularly for traffic that's headed to and from the Hershey Medical Center, and then also to provide an alternate access to Route 322 via Bullfrog Valley Road so that all the traffic doesn't have to use Wood Road or Route 22 as it does today. So that's the intent, and West End Avenue fully implements the first segment of that in the opening year, and then we'll work collaboratively with the township and the county and PennDOT on the second phase of that, which is shown on this purple line. Chuck had mentioned that it's proposed to install a signal at the westbound Route 322 off-ramps, which is true. I just wanted to add, we received feedback from your staff, from your planning commission. We observed that there's a significant safety issue that exists at that intersection today, in that on occasion, not perpetually, but on occasion, there are queues that back up off of the westbound ramp towards the main line where there's high-speed traffic on 322, and the signal will address that existing safety issue and then also accommodate the additional traffic that's associated with West End. One other point that I want to highlight, and then we'll get into a bit more discussion about the roundabout. We did do an extensive evaluation of the proposed roundabout and its location at the request of your engineer. Wanted to note that in order to put a signal in at the westbound ramp here and address those safety and backup issues that we had talked about, we do not believe it's possible to install a signal at the west ramps and then to leave the existing frontage road and the existing signal at its current location. And the reason for that is simply there's not enough room. There's less than 300 feet between where the east ramps currently intersect today with the signal and where the west ramps are today where a proposed signal would be. Ultimately, what that would lead to, we believe, is queues stacking through the signals and then potentially left turns southbound from Waltonville Road, having to turn across a stack of car to get onto the eastbound ramps, which creates a fairly significant safety concern. By moving the ramp and the frontage road to the south and tying it into the roundabout, this allows us to have about 900 feet of separation distance between the west ramps and the roundabout, which gets you much closer to PennDOT's desired intersection separation and will allow enough stacking room between those intersections that will allow both to operate efficiently. Briefly, I want to talk about the roundabout. This is a zoomed-in view of the roundabout. That was a much larger or a much smaller scale. It's very hard to see. Just want to make a note. We reoriented this. We're not trying to mess you up. But Waltonville Road's going across the page, and it's only because we can show more of it this way. That's why we did it. We took some feedback from the team that it was a little bit confusing. Now, a couple points we want to make with respect to the roundabout. One, the roundabout is driven by PennDOT's design standards. I had mentioned this in the sketch plan phase, but PennDOT's standards now require that if a roundabout is feasible at an intersection, that a roundabout be installed over a traffic signal or over a stop sign. So they ultimately are driving the ultimate implementation of a roundabout. And I think largely it's for two reasons. One, PennDOT has found that roundabouts have a higher capacity or a higher ability to accommodate traffic than a conventional traffic signal. And roundabouts also, and there was just a recent study that was done by PennDOT proving this, roundabouts over the long term have led to substantial safety improvements at intersections. Where they studied roundabouts versus the intersection control that existed before the roundabouts, PennDOT found in the state of Pennsylvania over the last 20 years, there was a 50% reduction in crash history where roundabouts were installed, and there was a 100% reduction in fatalities and major injuries. In essence, what that is saying is they put a roundabout in, and there have been no fatalities or major injuries at any of the roundabouts since they've been implemented in Pennsylvania in the last 20 years. Lastly, I will just talk briefly about the scale of the roundabout and then turn it over to Dave to kind of close this out. Just wanted to identify that the intent of the roundabout is to be multimodal, so there will be pedestrian crossing accommodations across all four legs. You'll note here on the west end of the west side of Waltonville Road, we show a trail that runs all the way up to the overpass that by design. If you're familiar, there's sidewalk on the west side of the overpass of Route 322. So our intent is to provide a pedestrian facility that runs all the way to the overpass so that anyone walking to and from the borough, at least from the overpass, has the ability to do it in a protected fashion. Chuck had referenced this. This is a single lane roundabout similar to what exists out on Route 322. However, because of the possibility of volumes increasing and the need for additional lanes, we have sized this in such a way where if additional lanes are needed in the future, it can be done easily without substantial reconstruction of the roundabout. And then lastly, this will be designed to accommodate bike traffic. Again, this being a multimodal development, we know the sensitivity to bikes in this area. PennDOT has a similar concern to make sure that these facilities are designed to accommodate bikes. The roundabout will be designed so that bicyclists are able to circumnavigate it like a car, like a vehicle, which is their legal right. And we think most experienced bicyclists will do that because it's the most efficient. The other element that we've added, which is the current state of the practice, is we've provided bike pull-off lanes approaching the roundabout so that those who are not comfortable can get out of the roundabout onto the trail and cross at the pedestrian crosswalks and then continue and enter back on if they feel more comfortable doing that. That's the two alternatives that PennDOT and the industry standard requires at this point, so this will be set to make sure that bikes, pedestrians, and vehicles are all accommodated safely. Last point, our study concluded with implementation of the improvements that we recommended that site access would be accomplished safely and efficiently for Hershey West End in accordance with township ordinance standards, and then that off-site traffic impacts within that 1 mile circumference that I had identified would be mitigated to levels that meet PennDOT standards and the township standards that are shown in your subdivision land development ordinance and then also your zoning ordinance for the master plan and conditional use. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dave to close this out. I'm sure it would be uncommon for you to not have questions on traffic. I think we're going to jump into questions right after Dave's done. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have on what I presented.
I mentioned earlier this is a conditional use hearing and conditional use applications should be granted when all of the applicable criteria set forth in the zoning ordinance has been satisfied. Can't don't go too far. I need you in a second. Yes. Yeah. Don't leave me. And I submit to you that through the exhibits that have been admitted into the record together with the testimony that's been presented this evening, that they, all of the applicable criteria in the zoning ordinance, including that in Appendix C, has been satisfied for the purposes of approving this conditional use. Also, under the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code, this board may attach conditions to an approval that are reasonable. And earlier today, we reviewed conditions that I believe are very similar to the ones that are in the staff report that you received. And Ken, for the record, as representative of Hershey Trust Company, trustee for Milton Hershey School, the fee simple owner of the property and the developer of this project, at around 2 o'clock this afternoon, did you review the revised proposed conditions? And do you agree to, should this board grant the conditional use approval, do you agree to those conditions being attached to the approval? Okay. We have nothing further, and with the admission of the exhibits, we'd like to conclude our testimony subject to questioning from you and subject to rebuttal, should there be a need for rebuttal.
Those were conditions submitted by Community Development?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they're the same condition, very similar conditions to the one that are in your staff report. There was some wordsmithing done and one or two added, I believe, at the very end.
Would that limit any conditions that the board would want to put on it?
No.
Okay.
If I can just add two things to hit. Yeah, I did share the conditions of the conditional use so that they would at least be able to, so I wouldn't have to read them into the record.
Yeah.
And so that they would at least be able to react to them. And secondly, there's just one item hanging out there I feel that needs addressed, and that is under the conditional use for life care facility, skilled nursing home, there's a provision in there that allows the Board of Supervisors to grant the applicant one-half parking space per institutional dwelling unit and one parking space for employee, which is key to your parking counts. And I didn't hear you guys ask specifically for that.
We are requesting that parking relief to the extent that that can be granted under the zoning.
So again, within the conditional uses for that type of dwelling unit, understanding that there's probably not as many drivers in an institutional dwelling unit, there is a provision in the ordinance to allow reduction in parking. As you've heard me explain, they have surplus parking just in the off-street parking. And then on the on-street parking, they have over 1,000 additional spaces. So I think that's a reasonable thing to grant. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
I have a question, Chuck. The Appendix C, Amy, that you're talking about for the formulas, so the financial part of this, is that our zoning Appendix C?
Yes.
And is that available in any of the material we've got in here?
It's in the tab... Tab 11.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Matt, if you think you could figure that out.
Amy, I have a question while you're standing at the mic, and I apologize if it's somewhere in this and I just didn't see it or didn't get to it yet, but when you have the projections that we would realize annually, both for the township and the school district, are those projections based on year one, the final year, or are they an average of the project since all of these phases span several years?
It's the final year.
Okay.
Of each phase. So once you're fully constructed, that's what you're going to realize.
It would just help from a budgeting standpoint to know, to be able, and I know we would be in conversation with all of you as we move forward, but to be able to know what we might realize in 2023 versus 2027, just to help us with projections. So.
Yes, ma'am. Understood.
Okay. Thank you.
Amy, as long as you're up, make money, Amy. As long as you're up there. So I understand that at full build out, $2.9 million.
So that's a total of all, yes, of all of the phases combined, that's what the total will be in one-time revenues over that 12-year build-out.
$1.159 million annual. What's the phrase you used? Repeated annual? Or?
Yes, sir. So once you're completely constructed, that's going to be the estimated annual reoccurring revenue from that point forward.
I noticed that you looked at Appendix C. Consult with any of our department heads, for example. I'm very concerned about the infrastructure undertaking that the township's going to have to implement here in terms of road maintenance and repair, plows, fire coverage, and all other aspects of community development. And so you're mentioning that by your calculations that you anticipate that upon full build-out, we'll be in the black in annual revenue rather than in the red. Is that correct?
That's correct. Your staff actually contemplated those expenses. They have, let me find the exact place. I think it's Appendix E on the second page, so that would be 245 of the ordinance. This is where they have the estimated municipal expenditures. They actually have provided a formula for how to take your previous year's expenditures, allocate them over all of the people in the township to come up with a multiple that you would then apply to any new residents to give you an idea of what your total expenses would be. Now, they didn't ask specifically for road maintenance because I think it's figured into this number. In fact, I know that it is. I've consulted with Brandon Williams on that. But I did talk to PennDOT District 8 anyway. I was curious. And it looks as though your liquid fuels allocation will increase by $19,000 and some change per year to cover the maintenance for that 5 miles of new municipal roadway.
5.32 miles, you ask?
Yeah, yes.
Factored into the expense revenue calculation?
I think that was the intent of that portion of Appendix E, yes. Mm-hmm. I can provide you the exact formula. So
if you have it, just get it on the record.
Sure. So the estimated municipal expenditures are required to be calculated using the prior fiscal year general fund expenditures divided by the total population of the last census year. You're to take that result and multiply it by the estimated number of new residents. And again, the number of new residents are calculated using the factors provided on that first page of Appendix E.
Mark, if it's helpful, I did have a conversation with Amy as she was going through this process, and I know she's been working closely with Brandon in terms of how he's conducting the review of the economic impact analysis, but she did ask about typical expenditures that we would be incurring, road maintenance, things like that, but ultimately community development preferred that we follow the regulations that are spelled out in that appendix. So I believe that's the approach that they took, considering that that's really developed to be an all-inclusive formula.
Formulaic approach adopted in Tennessee.
Correct.
If I may expand on that, I just want to clarify that $1.159 million, that is anticipated as your net. So that is expected after those additional costs are figured in.
Craig, we had some of us were privy to that meeting that we had on traffic, and Chuck, you explained some of it, but I think it would be really good for everybody to hear again an explanation directly from you about how the levels of service dropped to certain points on Middletown Road, what the implications are, and how that plays into a future connection between Middletown.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Let me... So it's hard to see, but Chuck had referenced in our report, PennDOT has something called a marginal level service drop. So that is a fancy way of saying the delay with the development drops relative to the no build or no development condition, but it's within a typically accepted range where the traffic operation is not significantly impacted. That occurred at the frontage road intersection with Middletown Road. and the eastbound ramps, and then also at, it's just off this page, Wood Road and Middletown Road.
Chuck, you used that term, you used that term. What does that mean?
So level of service is the measure of traffic impact. It's like a grading system that you would see in schools, level of service A through level of service F. Each level of service just corresponds to an amount of delay or how much time someone waits to get through an intersection. So the way the PennDOT standard works, the way your ordinance works, is that if an intersection on average overall operates at level of service C with the development, it should also operate at overall level of service C with some minor exceptions to that. What our study shows is that at those two intersections, it operates without the development at overall level of service C. It then drops to overall level of service D at both locations. PennDOT considers overall intersection level of service of D to be acceptable operation. They consider E or F to not be acceptable operation. So it's called marginal because it's a drop, but it's within the typically accepted range. So in essence, where PennDOT takes you in those circumstances where you have a drop within the acceptable range is that they will accept it if the township concurs and if there's a plan to address the drops at those two intersections. Well, the drops are here at the frontage road of Middletown and down here at Wood, and the township, through their comp plan, has already thought through this. There is an improvement that's planned to be implemented to address those level of service drops, and that improvement is construction of the connector road here to Waltonville Road and then also the connection of West End Avenue. So that's where the collaboration with the township, with PennDOT, with the trust to advance this section of the roadway came into it. In essence, it was a recognition that we caused a level of service drop within the acceptable range, which wouldn't necessarily trigger that they build and fund the entire cost of the connector road between Middletown and Waltonville, but that we would work with the township to conceptually design it, to identify right-of-way impacts, to identify costs so that it could go to the next step.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you didn't you say that when there are those service level drops, that PennDOT wants you to mitigate that or have something in place with the township.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point. So what PennDOT said in this case ultimately was it's a marginal level of service drop, so the township needs to be supportive of that and have a plan in place to address it. Or you can install a signal at Wood Road and Middletown Road in its current location.
Right.
That to us, and I think your staff and those, I know Rick was at the meeting as well, to us feels like wasted money because you're putting a traffic signal in at Wood Road and Middletown Road that doesn't give the residents to the west of that the benefit of the signal that ultimately would be ripped out when the connector road goes in. So the thought was rather than spending money on a signal at an intersection that the township doesn't want signalized at that location to use it to advance the connector road between Middle and Waltonville.
In other words, this plan essentially necessitates that connector road in order to make that drop in service tolerable.
That wouldn't be correct. It's a marginal level of service drop, so PennDOT will accept it without any improvements because it's within that acceptable range.
So we could say we don't want to cooperate, and then you guys would have to put it in a traffic light at Wood Road.
Exactly. That's right.
I don't know. That's probably the wrong word to use.
What's that?
Tolerable is probably the wrong word to use. I think
And one thing to point out, part of the township's plan is for this West End Avenue to go straight through. You know, three quarters of it is part of this project. You know, if this project didn't occur, that doesn't happen. So you're getting something that maybe, you know, first of all, there's an ownership issue. You don't own all the district.
The traffic circle is being driven, the need for the traffic circle is being driven by the perceived need for a traffic light on the off ramp. That's what I heard from you tonight.
So PennDOT has specific warrants that have to be met to install a traffic signal. At the westbound off ramp with Waltonville Road, those warrants are met today without this development.
I get that, but your need for a traffic light in turn is based upon what you perceive to be a backlog of traffic down that ramp onto 322.
So ultimately it's a function of volume. So the need for a signal is determined by how much traffic is on Waltonville, how much is turning off the ramp. You oftentimes put signals in where you don't have long backups. There's just volume that's there. In this particular case, it meets signal warrants today, and the queue, at least as we observed, and the Planning Commission was really peppering some questions about it because one of the Planning Commission members had just observed it, backs up on occasion where it gets close to the mainline where you have high-speed traffic on 322 headed westbound.
I've never seen that.
We did. Yeah, I've been out here multiple times over the last 5 years. It's typically during a very busy PM peak hour, or it's not persistent throughout the day. It's a small window during the very busiest times. I'm not trying to represent it as being a persistent thing, but it is something that happens infrequently during peak times. I think the challenge is, even though it's infrequent, when you have queue traffic backing up next to a limited access high-speed roadway, there's the potential for a major safety issue.
Westbound.
I'm sorry. If I said eastbound, I meant westbound.
Eastbound, though, I've never seen traffic problem getting out there. Other than traffic.
Yep.
I have a bunch of questions here, and I'm sure other members of the board, too, but I do want to provide an opportunity for public comment and questions. As well, so we're almost at 7 o'clock.
Or do we just continue the hearing as we had originally planned to do?
Yeah. So how do you guys want to handle that in terms of?
I'm sure there are folks here who wanted to speak, so I'd hate to end it now without giving them
an opportunity.
Yeah.
And then we could ask questions later.
Right. I mean, yeah. I think we could extend this a little past 7 as we've done.
Because we're going to be here.
Right. We're not going anywhere.
But the folks who are here tonight.
Right. I'd hate to ask them to come back.
So
is everyone in agreement that we'll open the floor to visitor and public comments on this? Okay. So at this point, the board's going to refrain from asking questions, and I'm going to open the floor to any members of the public who would like to ask some questions or make public comments. And anyone wishing to do so, please approach the podium, state your name and your address.
And for those,
can you just be clear that it will be continued, that this hearing is not over?
Yes, we will not close the record tonight. We'll adjourn the meeting, but we will not close the record, and I envision us having
I think we already
another,
have something on the calendar. December 4th.
December 4th at 5:30.
Okay,
we were holding
all right.
As attended.
So the record will remain open. We'll just adjourn this evening at some point. So if anyone in the audience wishes to make a public comment?
Just a quick note for those of you who just came in. This is a public hearing about the West End project. So if your public comment is about that, please share it now. If it's about something else, please wait till we open up the next public comment.
Right.
Okay. My comment is regarding the development. Rich Gamble, Hershey, Pennsylvania, Parkersville. The only question I have and thing that I would hope they consider that before they start any major structure that would increase traffic, that the infrastructure be completed prior to any development. I think that would resolve a lot of our existing infrastructure problems. I mean, this is a great idea, but I would like to see this completed, all infrastructure, before any major development would continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Anyone else?
Hi, Rory Michelson. I'm a resident of Hershey. I'm in the Oakmont 5 Condo Association. I'm also a member of the executive board there. I had just had four questions. I was going through the binder quickly, so if the answers are there, great, but I couldn't find them. My questions are, is there a cost projection by phase for the various phases of this? That's question number one. The ownership of the residential properties, are they going to be owned by the individual homes, or is this going to be retained by the trust? That was question number two. How is the project going to be financed? Is the trust financing it, or are they going through a third party? And then number four is, once a individual phase begins, are funds for the completion going to be escrowed? My concern is you have turnover of trust senior personnel from time to time, and if the senior personnel have a different vision 5 years from now, are they entitled to change the vision of the phase that's ongoing, or is it committed from day one once the phase starts? That's it.
Roy, don't go too far, because I'm not sure whoever's going to respond remembers all four, but okay.
I think these are easily, I'll just quick. Cost projections, I think if you look through the book, Amy's work to develop the building permit process has the, there's estimated construction costs both for infrastructure and for building construction, so it is in there. Ownership of single family, there's realization, we're not leasing, people will own their a single family house.
That's
people will
simple.
Own their single. Yeah, fee simple. You will own the condo lot. Yeah, so you're going to buy a condominium lot and then own the house on it.
But not fee simple, right? Okay.
Sure. How about single family? Okay.
It'll all be subject to the condominium declaration, maybe two condominium declarations, but the idea would be that single family, for the most part, would be able to be purchased in a fee simple way as a condominium unit.
Thanks.
In terms of finance, the vision, at least for at right now, is that the trust will likely fund the infrastructure in terms of the road system, sewer lines, those kind of things, individual parts of the property, either through land lease. We intend to, at least for the commercial side, intend to control the ownership as much as possible, but financing, if we do a hotel, I don't know the answer to, how the developer is going to fund his hotel development. But as far as the infrastructure, road infrastructure, and I think that leads into that. I think there's a mechanism already in place, no matter whether it's a trust or, John Smith Development. If there's a road system required, there's a letter of credit system in place, and it wouldn't matter whether I'm here or somebody else is here in 10 years. If at some point we're not meeting the obligations as required, the township will draw on the letter of credit and finish that road or whatever wasn't done.
Does that answer all your questions, sir? Or was there a fourth one?
A little hard to hear, but on the fourth part, I guess I'm not sure if it was answered. When a phase starts, is there a guarantee that it's going to be completed? And
yes, well,
and how is the guarantee kind of in place?
So if that's just a question of improvement cost $10 million, the township will have a credit to make sure that.
And who is the guarantor? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
I'm sorry, sir.
Ken Bradley, 36 Glasgow Court, Hershey. I have one question. I understand the condo concept, the single home concept, the rental properties. Who's going to be the landlord there? Pardon me?
We don't know who's going to be the landlord of the rental property.
No. Okay, thank you.
Trey?
Thank you. My name is Jay Ziegler. I live on Bullfrog Valley Road. One of the things I didn't hear was the question about employment, how many people they anticipate this is going to bring in employment for the businesses, the residents, services, and industry, and so forth. And I'm a daily user of Bullfrog Valley Road, and your staff tells me it's not going to impact Bullfrog Valley Road, and I totally disagree. It will impact Bullfrog Valley Road, and I heard them ask for a waiver for widening that road on the existing tract of land that they own, also on Wood Road, and even the intersection down to 322 and Bullfrog. On my way here tonight, the queuing there at Wood and Bullfrog was 30 cars all the way down to the intersection at 515, as I had said, and which is, that's just work traffic from the med center. So if you add the work traffic to this development, I'm not talking about the residents. Perhaps the residents won't use Bullfrog as much as you think, but it's the employment that's going to use Bullfrog because they live in E-Town, Mount Joy, and outskirts areas that come here for the employment. So you have an issue there, and the waiver to not widen Bullfrog, I think you need to really visit that strongly because that's going to come at taxpayer dollars like Middletown Corridor is right now. And then also the word bypass was used. I mean, I sat through all the meetings through the comprehensive plan and also through the Homestown-Middletown study that we spent thousands of dollars for. And you use the word bypass. To me, a bypass is something that gets you there quicker and faster. And from what I see in that short segment that they're putting in, I'm not saying it's not a good plan, but that is 10 intersections. You have street parking on the road. Personally, I don't think I would use that corridor. The locals will use it, but I don't think your public's going to use it. So maybe you ought to revisit the bypass comprehensive plan and not do that other leg and just widen Wood Road and be done with it. And then also, again, don't grant them that waiver. Have that done and consider them doing the rest of it because that is not a bypass, not in my terms. But the employment, I don't know if, Amy, if you have a number for that or not to give us an idea. Thank you.
Okay, and the fall economic impact report has the employment broken out by phases, but in total, after the 12-year build-out, we're expecting the construction phase will have supported 3,594 construction jobs. Those are temporary. And once it's fully operational, we're anticipating 1,575 permanent new jobs.
Is there anyone else that has any questions or would like to make comments this evening? Hearing none, I will move to keep the record open, but to adjourn this evening's hearing. I'll entertain a second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Engel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. And this hearing, yes, I'm sorry.
Just so we can put on the record, so there's no need to re-advertise. Can we put on the record that it's going to be continued to 5:30 on December 4th?
Yes. Yes, 5:30 on December 4th. Thank you for reminding me of that. Appreciate it.
Take a five-minute break before
yes.
we come back.
Yes, and so this hearing is adjourned. We're going to take about a 5 or so minute break before our regular meeting.
It's a good thing to be able to see.
It's always a bonus. Yeah.
Maybe there's a cell phone in this pocket.
Put this back here. Trip the road.